Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Unlock me! Unlock me!
I'm not going to swear, okay?
You know what I'm saying?
No.
It's Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Hi, Solo Grody with you on a beautiful Saturday afternoon right here on 670 The Score. I hope you are well. Hope your weekend is off to a good start. And we have, I guarantee you, a spectacular show planned for you. I will make it that way. I will make it fantastic. I will deliver. And I will have help with some friends, some experts. The show will feature Steve Conroyd on the Blackhawks. Love talking to Cons. Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune discussing the Cubs, or the lack thereof Cubs. Cubs canceled for the weekend, and it's because of the COVID Cardinals, about whom we will speak with Chris Ranji, our old friend, now a St. Louis sports talk show host. We'll figure out what's going on with the Cardinals, if they'll ever play again. Whose fault is it? Are they mad in St. Louis at their players? Are the talk show hosts raging? I want to get a feel for what's going on in St. Louis and what is turning out to be a sham of a baseball season. And I never thought that I would say that. I really didn't. I'm the last person to say stuff like that. But its credibility is being lost by the moment with what is going on with the St. Louis Cardinals, I am sorry to say. I have also for you today some important takeaways from this week in Chicago Bears Zoom, including what I thought was the most interesting part of the Zoom calls this week, and that is about where the Bears will position Eddie Jackson. Yes, he is a safety, but he moved around a lot last year. And it sounds like it will be more of the same this year. We'll get into that. And plus, why is all this praise being heaped on Roquan Smith? I have a theory for you on that, about the talented young linebacker who wears number 58, just like Wilbur Marshall, who was a great player on the... He was better than Otis Wilson and Mike... Yes, he was. I'd love to have you on the show as well today. So you can text or call at the same number, 312-644-6767. 312-644-6767. Tweet me anytime, 24 hours a day. At Mark Grody Sports is the way to do that. I like to play on Facebook and Instagram as well. Any form of social media. I love it. Jordan Maley is our producer.
Who the hell is he?
Yeah, I have no idea. We are here with you until 6 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. No Cubs, like I said, canceled for the weekend because of the Cardinals, which, again, we'll address in about 20 minutes with Ranj. The White Sox getting slammed by Cleveland right now. 6-0 is the score of that game, bottom of the fifth inning. Once that game ends, or maybe towards the end of it, we'll talk about the White Sox and some of the issues that they've had recently. They're still where they should be and about where people probably had measured them to be, but some flaws in the game that are starting to leak through just a little bit with the White Sox. But they trail by 6. I'll keep you up to date on that score, so don't worry about switching. I'm here. Don't switch the samples, all right? The Chicago Blackhawks are officially in the playoffs after the qualifying round, whatever you want to call it. They eliminated Edmonton in four games, man. After last night's 3-2 win over the Oilers, 43 saves by Corey Crawford. I think it was 43 saves. I mean, seriously, the TV telecast did something different, and two separate publications today had something different as well, all between 40 and 45 saves. So I don't know the exact save total. We're just going to say 43 for Corey Crawford. Goals by Brandon Saad, Matthew Highmore, and there he was again. Is he a star? Dominic Kubalik. We'll ask Conroy that question. Is Dominic Kubalik a star? I don't know. 12 seed over a 5 seed. Hawks will play either Vegas or Colorado in the round of 16. I think they're playing now. I got to check that. But they will play the winner of that. The way it has worked and is working and will have worked is that they are playing each other right now in the final round of the round robin portion of the Stanley Cup qualifiers, that going down at Rogers Place in Edmonton, right where the Blackhawks played. Both teams have won their first two games, so the loser will be the second seed. The winner plays the Blackhawks. So you see exactly what they're dealing with, the best team in the Western Conference, once they get going and that. And we'll try to sort that out for you and keep you up to date on that particular score.
Knights and Avalanche, 0-0 after one period, Mark.
My man, Jordan Malley, he'll be doing scoreboard updates for us all day today. Yeah, just jump in whenever there's a score, Jordan. We'd appreciate that, man. Let us know what's going on. I'll get my eye on it here in just a little bit, but I appreciate you jumping in, man. And I have to say, there is something uniquely galvanizing about Blackhawks playoff hockey in Chicago. We know there is a divide in baseball. I mean, you're never going to get everybody together on baseball. You're just not. Even in 2016, even in 2005, there are two sides, and that's just the way it is, and that's the way it's always going to be. You can't be fans of both. But anyway, the fans, you know, the rally around the Bulls and the Bears, but it's different with the Blackhawks. And I'm talking about since 2009. They're kind of, the Blackhawks, they're everybody's dirty little secret during the regular season. It takes a lot to get consistent coverage and enthusiasm of the Blackhawks during the regular season. It's just proven to be the way it is. There has just never been a lot of real, hardcore, consistent Blackhawks talk during the regular season, even when they were winning the titles, the three since 2010. You got it more than you do now. But it's hard for whatever reason in this era of Chicago sports to get a lot stirred up with the Blackhawks in the regular season. But when they hit the playoffs, they come out from everywhere. And this is okay. Like I know it's like a dirty word to say bandwagon, but it is the ultimate bandwagon team in Chicago. It just is, and it's fun. It's a fun bandwagon. Like, think of it as one of those party trucks you see driving down the streets in Chicago, one of those trolleys with everybody drinking and acting ridiculous. That's what the Blackhawks are in the playoffs to the fandom. It's like a big, fun blast of a bandwagon. Nobody really knows what the hell happened during the regular season. Nobody really cares. They just know that it's warm outside, and the Blackhawks are playing really well inside, and it's a lot of fun. The fans are like, we'll be here when it counts, don't you? We may be hiding during the regular season. We might be away for a while in our summer homes and our winter homes. But when it's the playoffs, we're coming out. We're going to be there. I mean, for me, there's no sport for which I have more fun being on Twitter, like in the Twitter rooms, than Blackhawks playoff hockey. It is like nothing else. And I've been in those rooms for every single Chicago sport. For some reason, it's just a different thing, a different vibe. Blackhawks playoff hockey on Twitter, and you know, people sharing their thoughts, and everybody's kind of in it together in this novel. We're all learning who the hell's this Dominic Kubalik and why is he so good and why have I never heard of him? That's what it is for Blackhawks hockey in the postseason. Edmonton, getting into this series, they scored early in three of the four games in the series. Happened last night again with Josh Archibald going top shelf on a beautiful pass by Connor McDavid. And every single time, I have to say that the Oilers scored early in the series, including last night, I was like, oh, that's it. Yep, Oilers are better. They're they're faster. They've got this McDavid guy who I've been told is the best player in the world. The Hawks are a 12 seed. They shouldn't even be here. Whatever, that was fun. They lost McDonough this year, Stan Bowman. And then they come back and win. So the Blackhawks were better than the Edmonton Oilers in every single way. I'm not afraid to say it. The Blackhawks dominated the series, no matter what the Oilers players are saying. And they had a whole bunch of excuses on why things went wrong in this series and kind of disrespected the Blackhawks. Whatever, though. They dominated this series. That first game, 6-4, one of those cases where that score is a little bit deceiving. And it was. The Hawks completely outclassed the Oilers in that first. I mean, just dominated, pantsed the Edmonton Oilers. And that was the Dominic Kubalik game. And by the way, Kubalik became the fourth Hawks rookie to score a series-clinching goal since Daryl Sutter, Steve Larmer, and Jeremy Roenick back in 1990. But this is where, when I say the Blackhawks came out on fire, this is where I'm going to give Jeremy Colliton big-time credit. This guy had his team ready to play, and his counterpart, Dave Tippett, did not. Colliton pushed all the right buttons throughout the series. Like, he coached really well. There are concrete areas, like exact areas where that you can point to and say, that's good coaching right there. That's a good maneuver. That's a good matchup. That's a good adjustment on the power play. And we all know that Colliton, or maybe you don't know, Colliton has been an absolute whipping boy head coach for the Blackhawks since he came in and replaced Joel Quenneville in the middle of a season. And I was actually listening to Mark Lazarus, outstanding Blackhawks hockey writer for The Athletic yesterday. He was on with McNeil and Spiegel. Actually, that would be McNeil and Parkins on The Score. And he said this about Jeremy Colliton.
Great day in the series. Obviously, it was a big challenge facing an excellent team with some as good of players as you'll find in the league. But really proud of how we competed. You know, right from the first game, we showed we were ready and committed to doing the little things that give you a chance to win. So we found a way to win. We got some big saves from Crow to keep us in the lead, and just proud of how hard we competed and excited to continue on.
So that is Jeremy Colliton, not Mark Lazarus. We'll get to Lazarus here in a second. The Edmonton Oilers, back to Colliton while we're on him. The Oilers were 0-for-5 on the power play last night. That, again, is coaching. We all want adjusting on our teams, no matter what the sport is. And you had Colliton adjusting. Edmonton had been great on the power play against the Blackhawks, and all year, 0-for-5 last night. 0-for-5 last night. And yes, it was confounding, man, when the Blackhawks were committing those penalties, the major on DeBrincat, totally major. It was just infuriating. And then, actually, I don't know which one was felt worse, that or the final seconds penalty on Dominic Kubalik. You know, when you allow Edmonton, it's just a big waste of time for the Blackhawks when the opposing team, in this case Edmonton, starts a period on the pot. It just sucks. It's like you come back from being in the dressing room, get back on the ice, and oh, you're undermanned. This is the way we're going to start things. This is the way we're going to do it. So, yeah, you don't always overcome that stuff, and the Blackhawks were able to do it. So big-time credit to Jeremy Colliton. Play of the game last night, though, was not a goal, not a save. It happened on a goal. This was the go-ahead goal by Kubalik in the third period.
Right to the middle. Kubalik could not pull the trigger. Good stick there, Athanasiou. And Bear working against Tate, who won the puck. Shot. He's going down the Tate. Outward, Ethan Bear and Kubalik. Bang! The Hawks with the lead.
Yeah, I mean, the goal by Kubalik was loud, but there was work that Jonathan Toews was doing on that play to get him the puck. That looked like 24-year-old Jonathan Toews, man, outworking Ethan Bear behind the net. I mean, just working him, and then get like they were having their own little duel, and he gets it, spits the putt out to Kubalik, who made it happen. Like, he was just having a fight with a bear for that particular puck. So Taze was a superstar in this entire series. So let's hear from Captain Sirius. Here's Jonathan Taze.
Jonathan, what is it about the big stage that seems to bring out the best in your game?
I don't know. I think across our lineup, guys stepped up their game. You know, got a lot of young guys who maybe don't have a ton of playoff experience, showing what they can do. And I think that gets you going and motivates you more than anything. So just trying to do my part and go out there and do what I can and you know, follow suit with the rest of our team. So it was fun to see. I mean, we knew what we wanted to do coming into the series. Tonight, I think it was our first time where we had an actual answer to their power play. Great goaltending, obviously. But overall, guys got better as the series went along. And, you know, for myself, it was nice to get on the score sheet and make a difference that way. But hopefully keep getting better every game as we go along.
All right, check me out here. Check me out, Hall. Jonathan Taves and Patrick Kane are now 17-5 in series clinchers, and each have 29 points in the playoffs. Those two ain't going to let you lose if you get to the brink. That's just the way it's worked historically, which is why they have a chance going forward, which we'll get to later. He also, Taves, talked about the invaluable experience his teammates are getting by being in a postseason scenario. And sometimes when I hear that, I think it's BS, and like I don't really buy into it. It seems like it's like something you say about bad teams that squeak into the playoffs, which maybe the Blackhawks are. But I think in this case, there's some realness to it. The Blackhawks have 10 guys who have never played in a postseason series. And that felt, even though it wasn't exactly a playoffs, I don't even know how that goes down in the record books. Like, literally, do they put it down as qualifying round? I think. But it is postseason, and it is a series. It is a series, and it was meaningful. I think in this case, it was meaningful. It was meaningful to the players, and it's meaningful to Jeremy Colleton. I have no idea how Stan Bowman and the rest of the Wirtzes feel about Colleton and his future and his security, but if they didn't like him, he may be saving his job right now. And I don't want to be too dramatic about it, but this could be the Ditka We Became a Team series for the Chicago Blackhawks. And who knows what happens going forward. Corey Crawford, man, did he ramp up perfectly in this series? He was not great in the first two games, and he had every excuse in the world to not be great. Just being off as long as he was, for any goalie, that would suck. He had COVID-19. Which is awful, but he was great in the last two games, like this gradual ramp up to where you saw him get himself coordinated out there. 43 saves, or whatever it was last night, including a point-blank stop with 8 minutes to go. I don't remember who it was, but I just wrote, point-blank save for Corey Crawford, which was excellent. Like, some high degree of difficulty saves finally coming in the final two games. They weren't there in the first two games. They just weren't. But you kind of give him a pass considering all that he has had to overcome. And here's Crawford talking about returning to play without having the repetitions.
Obviously, it wasn't the best scenario. I would have liked to have had a few more practices, weeks of practice, and see more pucks coming into the series. But I mean, it is what it is, and just trying to work hard to be ready. And I think obviously I felt way better each game, playing each game and just seeing different scenarios and situations. Once you get more of that, then just the better you feel. So, I mean, tonight was obviously better.
Yeah, and like I said, he's just now getting into shape, which should portend well against either Colorado or Vegas. And by the way, the Hawks are 1-1-1 against the Golden Knights of Las Vegas this year, 1-3-0 against the Colorado Avalanche. All of that said, a little bit of tough love for you. Let's go ahead and stop allowing the early goals. Feels like they're playing with fire. No more of the major penalties. No more of the late period penalties. Stop that. And more Patrick Kane. Let's get some Patrick Kane on the scores, on the tally sheet at some point in time. He's due for one of those superstar Patrick Kane postseason games, which is good. A couple of defensive breakdowns we could do without as well, just like a couple of glaring moments. So, but other than that, hell of a series for the Blackhawks. Semi-unexpected but they dominated the series. They won the damn thing in four, and they did it in high-flying fashion for sure. More on the Blackhawks a little bit later on. We'll bring in Steve Conroy at 4 o'clock. But coming up next, let's go to St. Louis, find out what's going on with the Cardinals with our old friend Chris Ronji. That's next. I'm Mark Grody. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
That's embarrassing as a White Sox fan to act like what you just did. And I hope you're embarrassed, but chances are you're not, because that's how you behave around your friends. Good for you.
Just when you think you've heard every single Chris Ronji soundbite on 670 The Score, something like that happens, and I am giggling here on my couch in Chicago. I'm Mark Grody. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. This would be a bitch of a postgame for Ronji to do today, and will be for whomever is doing the postgame for the White Sox Radio Network today, because Cleveland is thumping the White Sox 6-0. Not only that, but White Sox Twitter is alive and going crazy on Ricky Renteria for allowing Drew Anderson to pitch two innings in this game. He gave up six runs, including home runs to Jordan Luplo and Framelio Reyes as well. So bad things happening for the White Sox right now. A hockey update for you as well. And just before my very eyes, a tie game between Vegas and Colorado. It is 1-1 with 13:14 to go in the second period of play. The Blackhawks will play the winner of that game, in what will be the first round of the playoffs. It'll be a best-of-seven scenario after the Blackhawks took out Edmonton yesterday. We'll talk to Steve Conroy about that series coming up at 4 o'clock. Right now, joining us on the Al Pomonte Ford Hotline, it is Chris Ronji. Shop over 500 new and used vehicles at Al Pomonte Ford in Melrose Park. Ronji, a former Score guy, as you know, now a St. Louis sports radio talk show host on 101 ESPN, The Fast Lane. What's up, friend? How you doing?
Oh, buddy, how are you?
I am well. I don't know if you heard me, the big buildup, but bad things are happening for the White Sox. And Ricky Renteria is – so if somebody is listening from the Sox Radio Network, how do you handle manager bashing after a White Sox game?
You know what I do now? Okay, so this is 15 years after I started doing that job.
Uh-huh.
I think what I would do now, having learned my lesson, is take my headphones off, walk out the door, and then hit the elevator button, hit one, go downstairs, and then leave. That's how you do it.
Mitch, I'm sorry. Fire me if you want to. I couldn't take it. Do whatever you got to do.
Where are you?
I don't care.
Where are you? You got a post-game show. Like, no,
come on,
you got
man.
A post-game show. I got to get the hell out of here. That's what I'd
you
be doing.
You are hilarious. Are the people in St. Louis mad at the Cardinals or sympathetic towards the Cardinals?
You know what? I think more than anything, they're sympathetic toward them because, first of all, we don't really even know how it happened, you know, how they first got infected or what happened with these latest positive tests. But they do think it the positives occurred in Milwaukee. And there were rumors about them being at a casino, but then Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, he actually checked it out and – I guess the casino there in Milwaukee, the Potawatomi, looked at security footage, and they looked at who was there, and I think like whoever checked in and used their cards, however it works when you go to a casino, and they don't have any record of any of the Cardinals going in. So I don't know if that actually happened, but that was a rumor from about a week ago. So who really knows? So I think that's the reason why they're getting the benefit. The players themselves are getting the benefit of the doubt. That's not to say that somebody didn't go do some stuff they weren't supposed to, or they at least weren't being diligent when they left their homes. Because, I mean, you're still free to go about town. I mean, you can go to the store. You can go to the coffee shop. You can go do a lot of things. So who knows if somebody was out and about not wearing a mask or, you know, not paying attention to what they were touching or who they were touching or whatever. You have no idea. So since we don't really know exactly how the first infection occurred, I think people are kind of, you know, let's lay off the Cardinals a little bit. But I also think, at least I hope, some of it is a realization from people in the area that they are in a very difficult situation, these players are. Like, the players have to be diligent. They have to pay attention to what they're doing. They have to be smart about where they're going. And now they've got actual rules that say they can't do certain things. But I think, I'm hoping anyway, that people understand that even if they follow all these protocols, they are being asked to play in an environment where this stupid virus is everywhere. And we as a country, and I know people want to turn this into something political, and it's just not. Anybody who wants to turn this into something political is flat wrong, because this is, the virus doesn't give a rat's ass about you being a Democrat or a Republican. It's here, and it is rampant, and it is everywhere. And we are doing a terrible job as a country of holding that virus down. And now we're asking players to travel the country, go to multiple different cities, and somehow not bring the virus back into the clubhouse. They have a job to do, yes. They have to be diligent, yes, individually. They have a responsibility themselves, but they're also being asked to do this in a really difficult environment. And I hope people are recognizing that.
So that said, how did you feel when the commissioner, Rob Manfred, basically did a scolding of the players and saying, get your acts together or we're going to turn this thing around? Did you think that was unfair of Manfred to basically say, it ain't on us, it's on the players?
Well, I don't think it was all or nothing anything. You know, I don't think it was, he was either 100% right or wrong. I think there is some truth to that, that the players have a responsibility. They have to, as best as they possibly can, follow every protocol, follow every rule they need to follow, so that they can limit their exposure to the possibility of catching this thing. Because if they catch it, if one person catches it and brings it back to everybody else, that's all it takes. It takes one guy. It takes one guy who says, I'm going to go to the club tonight because I'm 27 and I'm fine. Nothing's going to happen to me. And then they bring it back, and then everybody's infected and you have an outbreak. I don't know if that's what happened with the Cardinals. There doesn't seem to be evidence that that's what has happened. There were rumors, but rumors aren't evidence, so we don't know. But if that is what happened, yeah, a player like that should be on notice, because you're ruining it for everybody else. But at the same time, they are being asked to do this in a very difficult situation, which, because the virus is all over the damn country, it's very difficult to keep it out.
Talking to Chris Ranji, who is in St. Louis, talk show host on 101 ESPN. I'm Mark Rohde on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. So, Ranji, 10 games postponed, or will have been by the end of this weekend for the Cardinals. Has this season lost credibility?
I don't even know if it was credible in the first place. I think all this season really was just an attempt to get something out there. You know, it's, when you're only playing a third of the season, I personally don't know if I would feel as good about a championship coming off of that. If a team was, you know, if my team were to win, I don't think I would feel that great about it. It's better than nothing, but I don't think it would feel exactly the same. I think I might be in the minority on that. I do believe a lot of people would feel just as excited if their team won the World Series in this kind of, in these conditions, playing only 60 games as opposed to 162 and then a full postseason. But I feel a little bit differently about it. I would use this year as just an opportunity to go out there, play, do the best you can, put a product out there for people to watch. I think that's kind of what this is. I don't know if the credibility has changed one way or the other, but I think it's gone a little bit worse in the first 3 weeks of the season than I thought it would.
Uh-huh. I agree with you, man. I have said this, and this is in the midst of the Cubs having, I'm not sure if they still do, but maybe the best record in baseball, that whomever wins this thing this year, I do think that there should be an asterisk after whomever does. And everybody, that's that dreaded word. Do you highlight that? I do think so. I think that this is so unlike any other baseball season. Rules are different. There's going to be all these doubleheaders. It ain't the same. It is not the same based on what has occurred in the past. I absolutely think that there has to be some marking next to whomever wins.
Well, Grody, what it's going to be is this. The team that wins, that team and all of that team's fans are going to be like, this is just like winning the World Series any other year. And then the other 29 cities are going to be like, nope.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who it is. You know, if White Sox go on and win, White Sox fans are going to be like, that's legit. That's totally legit. And that's cool. I don't care. Like, if you celebrate this World Series, if they make it that far, which actually, you know, the longer this goes on and the more crap that's happened, unless half the teams can't play at once, like literally half, because we've already been to a point where like 20 to 25% of the teams couldn't play. So I think maybe the threshold is half. So if we get to the point where half of the teams can't play, then there's probably not going to be a World Series. But I got the feeling that everybody's going to power through here and just go for it.
Yeah.
And if you celebrate that World Series and you're excited about it, awesome. I'm not going to take that away from you. Good for you. It's great. But if the other 29 teams in 29 cities are like, you know, all right, whatever. Hopefully next year we have a full season and things are normal again. And we'll pick it back up then. But I don't think that losing out on this year is devastating.
Do you think that, is it possible that more Cardinals players will start to opt out based on what's happened with their team?
I think it's possible, but all we've heard so far is that nobody yet has expressed interest. So I don't know. I get the impression that probably not. Maybe you have one, but I kind of doubt it. What you have to look out for is when we are in the middle of September, so like September 15th, and it's pretty obvious there are a couple of different teams that are way out of it. They're not going to the playoffs. Then I think you might see players on those teams say, okay, that's enough for me. We're not going to the playoffs. What am I doing this for? It doesn't matter. I'll see you next year. I think that might happen. I think you might have some players opt out once you get to the middle of next month and they're out of the playoff race. But I don't know how many more are going to do it from now until then. I think it might be a slow trickle, and then I could see floodgates open up like the final week or two of the season.
So just doubleheader festival basically for the car. I mean, what have you heard about that? Or are they going to just not play as many games as everybody else? I'm confused.
I don't know. They had already scheduled, I think it was five doubleheaders. I think they had put five doubleheaders on the board before yesterday happened, before all the games got canceled yesterday. So I don't know. I haven't heard any word yet on you know, how that goes from here on out. But I don't know how you can realistically do it. I don't think, because that affects other teams too. I mean, yeah, you can tell the Cardinals you've got to play a bunch of doubleheaders. But the teams they have to reschedule against, they got to play doubleheaders too now because of you. So I don't know if that's necessarily fair to them if they don't want to do it. I think, honestly, the fair thing to do, the right thing to do would just be, hey, sorry, Cardinals, you don't get to play 60 this year. You're going to play like 50, and that's going to be the end of it. The problem with that is if Rob Manfred and MLB decide to go by win percentage for playoff berths instead of, you know, how they typically do it, then that's going to put some teams at an advantage. So the Marlins, for example, they're what, 7-1 now?
Yeah.
And if they were to end up playing that many fewer games than everybody else is playing, that's not fair to those teams who played more games, because the Marlins, you know, yes, they're playing well coming back from their break, but they also had fewer opportunities to lose. So that's not fair to everybody else. So I feel like there should be a threshold of games. Like, you have to play 52 games to qualify for the playoffs, and if you don't, tough luck, you're out. Or 55 games.
Yeah.
And then we'll go with win percentage after that. But to my knowledge, MLB hasn't come up with anything like that. But I think that's the only way to do it. And if it just so happens that the Cardinals end up playing, you know, 53 games and the threshold is 55 and they had a really good season with those 53 games, oh well, too bad. You know, it's a shame, but yeah, that's how we have to play this year. That's the way MLB should do it.
last thing for you, man, as a big baseball fan, as I know you are, what's it been like for you watching these games and in the lonely stands and the piped in sound and all of that?
You know, as far as just the games themselves, and I think this goes for all sports, I think the NBA product has been best. The NHL product has been probably second best, and baseball has been third as far as the big four sports here. But I think all of the TV product so far has been about as good as you can expect. And in fact, when you watch games, or at least the way I feel is when I watch games, I mean, you're aware of the fact nobody's in the building, but I'm enjoying them just as much. It's not like, oh man, this sucks. There's nobody in the crowd. Right. You know, that's not the feeling I get when I'm watching. I'm focused on the action and what's going on. And yeah, it's noticeable there's not a crowd and you don't get the exact same crowd noise, but it's baseball, you know? And I feel like it's not just as good, but I'm not thinking about it as much. It doesn't really take away from the enjoyment enough where I feel like I don't want to watch. So I think it's been a pretty good product. I think they've done a really good job with it, as best as they could possibly do.
Yeah, you fall into it pretty quickly. Do you think the Bears are going to kick ass this year and win the Super Bowl too?
Yeah, Mark.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
They sure are, Mark.
You know what? I tell you what, they should probably hire Jim Boylan, and then they could.
Oh man, don't say that word around here.
What in the
hell?
What in the world? Never mind.
I have no idea. Call Dan Bernstein. He's your Bulls buddy. If you just want to get him mad, call your boy Bernsey.
Is he freaking out?
Oh, he's losing his damn mind.
I love it.
He's been having these Cowley conversations, I call them. He has Joe Cowley on his show, and you know how Cowley likes to stir things up. So
no,
those two
he?
Get on it.
It's when did that start?
Yeah. Wasn't he the guy that you never had on White Sox Weekly just because you fear the ramifications?
He was originally. I wonder if I was told that I couldn't have him on anymore?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
I don't know. I'm just guessing. I wouldn't have.
Okay, so, hey, contrary to popular belief, Grody, uh-huh. I did not get a ton of directives the entire 10 years I did that job. People think that, like, oh, management's telling you to do this, and then, like, they really didn't.
I know.
I think, actually, no, they did tell me to do – I got this talking to twice, and the talking to was, hey, could you please stop calling our fans idiots? So I was like, you're probably right about that. I shouldn't do that.
If you don't mind, I mean, I don't want to tell you how to do your show,
right.
But if it's possible, could you not call our fans idiots?
Yeah, that was, I swear to God, that was like the only thing that the only feedback I ever got from the team, from anybody associated with the team about how to conduct a post-game show.
Yeah.
Once or twice, I was told to please not refer to our fan base as idiots.
That's probably for the better, but yeah, man. Oh, Cowley and Bernstein are just eating this up, and I sometimes we do radio acts and we just become enraged because it's fun. I think Bernstein is really losing his mind over the potential, because everybody's saying now that it's a real possibility that Jimmy Ball is going to be back next year. So
oh my God,
for
the love of Pete, it's amazing. Well, hey, you know, well, good luck with all that.
Ranji, I'm glad you gave me some long laughs today, brother. Thanks for coming on a Saturday, dude. I really appreciate it.
Bears.
Bye, Chris. That's Chris Ranji, St. Louis sports talk show host. You know, I'm thinking about the casino thing, and I really hope that didn't happen. There is. Look, when you go into a casino, that's already filthy. COVID-19 or not, most casinos in any given year have their own form of virus going on. I mean, you know, when you walk into a casino, it's just bad things. Everything about a casino is is wonderful. It's the devil. It is the devil because you're gambling. It's the devil's work. You're throwing away money. You're drinking. You're gambling. You're smoking. You're collecting diseases. There is no more filthy place to be or wonderful place to be in life than a casino. So I would hope they weren't actually going into a casino. So I hope that the Derek Gould story out of St. Louis of the Post-Dispatch is correct, that nothing has been proven in that regard. Man, that was fun talking to the Ranj. He used to do the White Sox pregame show, and don't call your fan base awful. Don't do that. So funny. Speaking of the White Sox, they are trailing Cleveland 6-0. I understand there's been much Twitter rage over Ricky Renteria and his decision to leave Drew Anderson in for a second inning, and he gave up some bops for sure. So if we get a chance, we will check in at Guaranteed Rayfield a little bit later on with Bruce Levine. If the man is available, we shall see, because he may have work to do. I'm Mark Grody. We've got Steve Conroy coming up at 4 o'clock. Get seriously into the Blackhawks. Mark Gonzalez talking Cubs with us at 5:20. I got some Bears talk for you as well. And I've been told by our wonderful producer, Jordan Maley, that we have some Les Grobstein fun. Maybe we can shoehorn some of that in here in just a couple minutes on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This guy's an idiot.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
At some point, somebody's got to put their damn name on this decision, whatever it is and however it is. Tell us the truth. Tell us why you're doing it. Bulls fans deserve better than this garbage. You have all this goodwill. You take all this time to make the right decision and say a widely lauded decision to bring in one of the smartest guys in basketball, an up-and-coming executive, and say he has control. He's in charge. And then we start hearing of all these Garth Formanite little weaselly survivalists that are still in there, still whispering in ownership's ear. The whole point of hiring Karnišovas was to get rid of this, to get rid of those people, to clear out all of this old backbiting stuff, all the back channel things, all the stuff that's standing in the Bulls' way, pulling in opposite directions, all the whisper campaigns and all the power games that go on back there. It's enough. It's well past enough. You screwed the pooch on this thing already, if that's what's happening.
I thought it was a real positive.
Tell the truth. You know, whenever somebody says screwed the pooch, I get nervous. I don't know, it just sounds filthy, doesn't it? Screwed the pooch. Very dirty sounding. I don't know why. And really, literally, it's not, but screwed the pooch. Screwed the pooch. You screwed the pooch. Okay, so it's official now. Yes, absolutely, Jim Boylan should come back. I felt like he started to win those guys over last year. I think he deserves another chance. He was not put in a great position. Absolutely bring Jim Boylan back, because we'll get more from Bernstein just like that. And I think that Jay Zawoski, the producer of the Dan Bernstein Show, needs to have Joe Cowley on once or twice a week. The Cowley conversations.
That's got to be a weekly thing, Mark, now. That has to be a weekly thing. That was an absolute evisceration and something that I think needed to be said, because people are slowly forgetting about the Bulls.
Oh, yeah. No, and Dan is actually very right, and I think he speaks for a lot of you Bulls fans out there, for sure. To me, it was inconceivable. Like, honestly, when I heard the Cowley conversation with Bernstein live, and it was after one of the days that I had gotten up to do the Mully and Haw pregame show, which I do every day now from 5 to 6, and I'm walking around, and I'm in that got up at 3:30 in the morning fog, so I'm hearing Dan setting it up and saying that there is a real possibility that Jim Boylan can come back, and I'm not even kidding. I had to kind of stop myself and say, am I in a dream right now, because I napped. And you know how naps can just kind of befuddle the rest of your day. Like, you're just disoriented for the rest of the day. And I was like, okay, I stopped. I collected myself. And I said, I kind of hit the palm of my head to my forehead. I'm like, really? Did they just say what I think they said? That it's a real possibility that Jim Boylan can be back. I mean, I'm not sure. Now I'm conflicted. Is Jim Boylan coming back? good for sports talk radio for the score or bad for the score, because there's two sides of it. Obviously, he provides great entertainment in that caustic Dan Bernstein kind of way. But then on the other side, if you get a credible coach trainer, maybe they win, and that automatically causes, you know, probably good ratings and good talk. So which one is it, man? Which one do you think it is? I think it's Boylan coming back.
I think it's good for us. It's good for anybody covering the team.
That's what I mean.
But, I mean, you bring up a really good point, and I think people don't think about this about the player side of it, too, is all the criticism that players get here. Mark, take two examples right now in the bubble. Cameron Payne is going off for the Suns. A guy that nobody's ever even heard of in Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot. Have you ever even heard
nope.
of him? He's for the
nope.
Nets. He is going off as well. Two guys that were with the Bulls last season. And I wonder if the criticism from fans is something that plays a factor in it, too.
Yeah. I You mean a factor in them making changes, or
a factor in like guys having a certain mindset when they come in here, whether it be coaches or players, and how they perform too?
Yeah, I mean, that says it all. I mean, those are good examples of possibly where organizationally the Bulls have been bad, and if they do one thing that is like what they did in the past, then it's absolutely ridiculous. If you could show me a place where Jim Boylan actually did improve, or where he should have this team, or where he is advancing this team, I'm definitely willing to listen. There just weren't a lot of examples. And when you ruin your credibility with players, which it seems like he may not have ever even had, I don't see how you can come back. And we've all said it, so this is not going to be original, but it's true, and it's the most important part of all of this. Arturas Karnišovas and Mark Eversley both said that this has to be a players-first organization, and Jim Boylan, maybe Jim Boylan is a good assistant coach, and maybe someday in his life he's a good head coach. But what he's not is a player's coach.
Thanks a lot.
He is not a player's coach. So that is the converse of what they're trying to do with the Bulls right now. He is not a player. He's a coach's coach.
The puzzling thing about him, too, is he's had such strong relationships with guys that have been prominent here. Butler, he had a really good relationship with Jimmy Butler. And even after he's left, and other bizarre stars in the NBA, it's just weird. And then, yeah, you hear a company line from guys from Daniel Gafford to Zach LaVine to Lauri Markkanen all say about basically the same thing. And you know that's not their real thoughts on him, but it's just it's bizarre. He is not a player's coach, and he tries to be.
One thing that I've learned in the broadcast business, and this is the same as it is with the players and the coaches, that coaches know who to schmooze. They know who to become friends with. He knew it was smart for Jim Boylan to become friends with the popular kid in the class and the star, and that's Jimmy Butler, or various stars throughout the league. You see it with reporters and broadcasters all the time. I've seen it. You try to create strong relationships with the best players and the best coaches, because that is going to behoove you the best in your career. I'm not particularly good at it, but I've seen lots of other people do it, and sometimes those friendships and relationships are fake, and they benefit both parties. That's for sure. It's a smart move by Jim Boylan, and I think that's part of it. So, and obviously, look, Jim Boylan is the head coach of an NBA basketball team. He's made smart moves in his life, obviously, to get to where he is. He has forged strong relationships. He has done things. Good for him. Good for Jim Boylan. I mean, seriously, congratulations. I don't think he's a bad guy or anything like that. So right now, this is not about Jim Boylan as much as it is about his bosses and anybody who would decide to bring him back next year. And the whole money thing, that's ridiculous, and I can't say it better than Dan Bernstein said it, so I will say no more. I think there should be a little moratorium period, a little break from talking about the Bulls, because Bernstein did it so well that nobody else is going to be able to top that. And as I speak, Yoan Moncada, I believe it was Moncada, just crushed a baseball. That might be the deepest home runs I've seen this year, that I have seen. It's 7-1 Cleveland, though, in the bottom of the eighth inning, as Moncada rounds the bases right now. Heel toe. heel toe. I'm Mark Grody. This is The Score. When we come back, let's talk about the Blackhawks with Steve Conroy, the former defenseman and current analyst for NBC Sports Chicago. Cons is next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Thanks a lot.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.